Whenever visiting Portland, which wasn't often or ever for very long, Ian made a point of meeting his mother at the Clackamas United Church of Christ on Sundays. The building's funky shape, resembling a sort of towering but warped teepee, reached right up to heaven. Inside, its wood plank and beamed ceilings lent a cozy feel to the lofty space. A narrow, modern stained glass window that had to be at least 20-some feet high filtered pale blue light onto the altar. Sitting in those pews reminded him of his youth, of the hours he'd spent here with his parents, who'd volunteered to help with every function and fundraiser, always reaching out to assist people in need. His dad might as well have been a king for how well-loved and respected he'd been in this congregation. Ian presumed his father now watched over it like a guardian angel, exactly the way the man had approached life on Earth, too. "Can I crash in the basement for a week or two?" Ian asked his mom, who'd taken him to lunch after the service. He shoved a French fry in his mouth, having craved comfort food while in Haiti. Going months at a time without it excused his current gluttony. "I wish you could, but the shelter is strictly for women and children. Even if it weren't a rule, your presence might make some residents uncomfortable." She patted his jaw like she'd done since he was about 6. "Can't you stay at the motel until you return to Haiti?"
"Guess I don't have a choice."
$90 a night added up quickly when one didn't have an income or savings to speak of. He needed a quick influx of cash so he could return to his project. He'd blown the very last of his savings on the ticket home to collect his things from Farrah's place. He didn't own much, but he couldn't risk her tossing the baseball he'd caught with his dad at the inaugural Mariners game at Safeco Field, or the hand-woven wool mochila he'd been given by a young girl in Colombia after he'd assisted her family following that massive mudslide. "If you need a little extra cash, I can help." His mom narrowed her gaze like she did whenever she thought she'd read his mind. Years of practice made her pretty damn good at it. "Nah." Ian dragged another fry through the glob of ketchup on his plate, wishing that had been easier to say. Being broke sucked, but he wouldn't tax his mom either. He'd figure it out on his own. While here in the States, he'd seek some new donors for his project, too. On a personal level, he'd never much cared about money, preferring the freedom to fly off to the next natural disaster whenever possible. To make ends meet, he'd routinely taken short-term home care gigs and done volunteer EMT shifts for a small stipend, enough to cover rent on a tiny studio in a lousy part of town. Then, Farrah had invited him to live with her, which had been a nice upgrade. He'd contributed what he could when he could. Her initial attitude toward his priorities had lasted long enough for him to get comfortable and believe she was a woman like his mom, who could handle a relationship with a man much like his dad. But once Farrah had realized she'd never change him, never persuade him to take a full-time job stateside, she'd handed him walking papers. Via text, no less. "You sure?" His mom tilted her head to the left, gentle smile in place.
"You know me. I'll scrounge up some cash to get by till I leave."
She nodded, her gaze growing distant. "I think Farrah will regret her decision."
"Doubtful. I let her down. I missed a lot of things that she asked me to attend, like her cousin's wedding and her family's Easter brunch." He carried some shame about that because Farrah had been good to him and deserved better.
"It's not like she was alone, Ian.
she would have been surrounded by family at those events. His mother reached out and squeezed his hand. Although only 60, she looked older. She'd never had an easy life. The years of honest but hard work had crisscrossed her face and neck with fine wrinkles and turned her brown hair a pretty shade of silver.
I shouldn't have made promises I couldn't keep.
Flying back and forth every 6 weeks had been expensive and exhausting. Farah couldn't join him because of her teaching job, which included summer school programs.
If I'd only been doing regular relief work, we might have made it work. But once I got hooked up with Archer and Stanley and got serious about founding the Crawford Volunteer Ambulance Corps, the writing was on the wall.
Of course, he had no intention of giving up those plans now. CVAC would be a reality soon, south of Port-au-Prince, in Jacmel. Looking back, his biggest mistake had been trying to make her happy by sinking the bulk of his meager savings into a ring this past winter. A ring she'd kept even after she'd kicked him out. The fact that the wasted money distressed him more than the breakup said a lot about that relationship. About him, too, if he was being honest. The whole experience taught him that long distances and love don't mix. As if reading his thoughts, his mom said, "When you feel lonely or have doubts, remember, with the right partner, you can have a home and a family, just like your father did." She shot him a mother-knows-best look before taking her first bite of apple pie. The warm pie's cinnamon aroma made his mouth water.
"There aren't many women like you, Mom."
He grabbed a fork and snatched a bite of her pie for himself. Oh, man, that was good. She reached across the table to pat his hand. "I'm no paragon. I've had my moments, especially when you were very young. But when you love someone, you make sacrifices." The tone of her voice struck him sideways. Both of his parents had preached about sacrifice since Ian could walk. He enjoyed helping others, but sometimes a selfish side of him dreamed of indulgence, of freedom from the Crawford way. In fact, those thoughts had spurned the argument he'd had with his dad just before his father had died. That he'd died being bitterly disappointed in Ian haunted him. "Your dad would be so proud of what you're doing in Haiti." "I know I am. After everything he gave to the world, it's wonderful to think his name and mission will go on." Her eyes misted with memories. But Ian didn't deserve her praise. Not when he'd kept the argument between his father and him, those final 48 hours, a secret all these years.
"I've got big shoes to fill."
He recalled the trips they'd taken to Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. Then, his thoughts circled back to their last one. It should have been him, not his dad, who'd rushed back into that unstable building in search of more survivors. If they hadn't been locked in their own Cold War, if he had acted instead, his mom wouldn't have been a young widow. She wouldn't be so alone in the world, and Ian wouldn't live with such regret. He winced, shying away from the shame.
"Let's change the subject."
He took a long swallow of soda through a straw.
"I saw your friend Sarah last night."
"Oh?" She sat back after pushing the remains of her pie toward him. "Where?" Ian polished off her pie while explaining the circumstances behind Sarah's call and how he'd spent his night. Naturally, he omitted some details, like Gentry's lacy panties that left almost nothing to the imagination. He'd been trying not to think of those all morning, actually. At one point during church, he'd been trying so hard not to think about them, he was sure the devil himself would reach up and pull him under. Oh, the poor thing. New moms are overwhelmed. As a single mom, well, she's also desperate. Gloria smiled at her son. She'd said it so sincerely, it almost made him believe there'd been a time when she hadn't been competent and assured, if a little weary. "You're a good man, Ian Crawford," he winked at her.
"Thanks to you, maybe."
"No maybes, for sure." She set $40 on the table. "Sorry to rush off, but I need to get back to the Angel House. You okay?"
"Yeah."
He stood, reluctant to return to the no man's land of the lonely motel, with its stiff polyester bedding and vinyl chair. A stark contrast to the suede sofa and walnut floors in Gentry's condo, but an upgrade from most of the makeshift accommodations he'd called home while out in the field.
"No worries. I'll talk to you tomorrow."
His mom kissed him goodbye when they reached her 9-year-old red Honda. After she putt-putted away, he wandered next door to the convenience store and bought himself a local paper. A bunch of older kids wandered the aisles, grabbing candy, chips, and soda while horsing around, oblivious to the advantages of these stores. Within arm's length, you could buy first aid supplies, nourishment, and oil for your car. People in impoverished countries might literally kill for this stuff that everyone here took for granted. He shook off the thought and then strolled several blocks, newspaper tucked under his arm, enjoying the summer sunshine. He paused at Bilquist Elementary. The single-story brick-and-glass building hadn't changed much, other than a new coat of royal blue paint on sections of its exterior. He suspected the inside smelled exactly as it had decades ago, and that those scents could unlock many memories. How many schoolmates still lived around here? What might his life be like if his parents hadn't indoctrinated him into the Crawford way? Questions without answers. He sighed before continuing his stroll, unsure what had him so keyed up this morning. He didn't miss Farah, at least not the way he should. In truth, they'd spent more time apart than they had together, which was why she dumped him, and probably why he didn't mourn the loss like he should. Ian mourned a different loss, that of the hope that he could have it all, like his mom believed. He kept walking until he got to Hetty Knott's Park, then took a seat at a picnic table shaded by a copse of maples. 40 feet away, several young kids scaled the jungle gym. Their moms conversed on the nearby benches, or sat with their noses practically touching their smartphones. A gentle summer breeze whistled through the leaves overhead, its peaceful sound often punctured by a child's laughter or shout. None of those cheerful sounds drowned out the voices of two chatty moms. "I'm glad Cindy's not here, droning on about her diet and yoga obsessions. For God's sake, let me eat my brownie in peace, right?" The blonde sipped something topped with whipped cream from Starbucks. The brunette nodded. "She should focus her energy on Bobby. That kid needs help. He's such a loner."
"Not my problem. I've got enough to deal with at home with my three."
The blonde set her now empty cup on the ground beside her feet.
"Hey, who cleans your house? I need to find someone new, but I hate that search process." Ian snorted before he could stop himself, which drew a sharp look from the blonde.
Is there a problem? She asked.
He shook his head, his gaze steady but pleasant.
No, ma'am.
Allergies.
She looked skeptical of his white lie, proving she wasn't an idiot, even though she seemed like a pill. She turned back to her friend, but not before he heard her mutter, "Asshole."
Yeah, well, maybe.
Like many of his humanitarian compatriots, he struggled with an intolerance for whining because he'd witnessed years of high-stakes pain and suffering. He might be a little worse than most, but come on, people. The mothers in low-income and disaster-stricken countries didn't have smartphones and cleaning crews. Yet, somehow, he knew they'd appreciate a sunny, carefree day enough to stay present rather than complain or scroll through Facebook. Whatever. He had to focus on his own situation so he could get back to where he belonged. Turning his back on the women, he unfolded the newspaper on the tabletop and perused the headlines. Not much had changed since the last time he'd been home. Another article about the much-debated coal terminal project along the Columbia River. A suspicious warehouse fire that, fortunately, hadn't injured anyone. The seller-friendly residential real estate market. A typical week in a typical American city. He tried to imagine staying put and reading that same news every day. Keeping a steady job at a local hospital. Waking up to an alarm clock instead of a rooster. Rushing asthmatics to the ER and making small talk at a cocktail party with women like the ones at his back. So-called normalcy had been something he'd wished for in the weeks before his father had died. Then, his world had turned upside down, and he'd assumed his father's mantle to cope with his grief. Now, he could barely recall the young man he'd been, or remember why he'd thought he'd be happier with a quiet life. He flipped to the classifieds. Hard to say what was more depressing, the lack of overall jobs or the lack of options for a guy like him. He'd hoped for a temporary home health care position. Sadly, those few ads sought at least a 3-month commitment. That would kill the momentum he, Stanley, and Archer had going now. 1 month max would be ideal. He'd amass some money and do some networking, and then head back to Jacmel. He refolded the paper and tossed it in the trash. From the corner of his eye, he saw a redhead with a toddler enter the playground from the opposite side from which he was leaving. They reminded him of Gentry and Colt. Gentry Cabot. He'd thought he had her pegged, but she'd surprised him in the nanoseconds she let her guard down. Or maybe her underwear had blinded him to her flaws. Guys were easy that way, and he wouldn't pretend to be above those baser instincts when it came to women and sex. He smiled. Remembering the firm curve of her ass, that image would stay with him for quite some time, considering the lacy thong didn't leave much to the imagination. Her legs were probably as long as his, too. And, as stellar as her backside had been, it had been her chest that had made him nearly fall to his knees. Maybe because the too small tank had covered just enough to allow his imagination to run wild. Or maybe because the cup of her breasts perfectly matched the curve of her bottom. Heavy, yet pert. He could almost feel them in his hands now. He stopped and shook his head, stunned by the effect of the vivid daydream. Now that
not his earlier snort, was the jerkiest thing he'd thought today. Objectifying a poor woman who could barely fend for herself, let alone deal with her fussy kid. He wondered about Colt's diagnosis, then wondered why he cared. In all probability, he'd never see them again. As much as curiosity poked at his conscience, he had his own troubles to sort out, and Gentry Cabot wasn't one of them. Chapter 3. Ingenious. According to Merriam-Webster, marked by originality, resourcefulness, and cleverness in conception or execution. According to me? Me. Dr. Evans, or the cucumber, as Gentry thought of her, thanks to her cool temperament, kept one hand pressed to Colt's head and peered into his left ear through her otoscope. She didn't frown or hasten her examination, despite his spastic wailing. What? Gentry hovered, chewing her thumbnail, desperate for a diagnosis with a cure unlike his colic. Seeing Colt shivering in pain or fear or both made her want to scoop him into her arms. Did all babies look so cold in a doctor's office? The cucumber remained focused, turning Colt's tiny head to inspect his other ear, acting as if he weren't causing a chain reaction of screams among the other children in the adjoining exam rooms. Gentry half expected the life-size giraffe wall sticker to start curling at the edges. Oh, Colt, what can we do for you, boo? He's got an ear infection. Dr. Evans tossed the throwaway plastic tip in the trash before returning the instrument to the wall unit that housed the blood pressure cuff and other stuff. You can dress him now. She then sank back onto the black vinyl swivel stool and rolled to her desk, where she retrieved a prescription pad. Thank God. Medicine meant a cure. A cure promised some measure of relief for Colt, and possibly for her, too. She managed to get Colt's frenzied limbs back into his onesie, then cradled him to her chest and swayed. How'd he get it? He's hardly exposed to other people. Babies are susceptible to a lot of things. He has a little cold, and that could have caused the infection. Infants are on their backs a lot, and because their canals are so small, they don't drain as well. Given his colic, it's no surprise you didn't notice unusual crankiness sooner. She tore the script from the pad and smiled. Perhaps the cucumber had intended to make Gentry feel less incompetent with that excuse, but it had the opposite effect. Other mothers, ones like Sarah, would have known right away. Just like every day since he'd been born, Gentry had failed him in some way. Each day it became harder to stop second-guessing herself and her choices. She glanced at the handwriting on the prescription. I thought antibiotics weren't good for kids. If Colt were 6 months or older, I might recommend other options. But with infants, we like to knock it out before it gets worse. Hopefully, he won't be prone to these infections in the coming years. She placed Colt's chart in the bin the nurses managed. Antibiotics for 10 days. He should start feeling better in a day or two. If you can raise one side of his mattress, that will help with the drainage. A day or two? Dear God, that sounded brutally long. She nuzzled her son's fine hair, her heart sore from his pain. So I guess I shouldn't put him in daycare until he's better, huh? That meant no work for her. An image of Hunter's disapproved scowl flashed. Gentry kissed Colt's head, rocking him to no avail. Did he feed off her anxiety, or was it the other way around? Most centers prohibit kids with fevers.
Colt's temperature is elevated, so I'd keep him home for a few days.
Dr. Evans's tight grip on the doorknob subtly revealed that, despite her serene voice, her nerves were frayed from spending 10 minutes with Colt.
Infants in daycare tend to catch more colds than those at home. Some argue that it can build the immune system faster, but you want to take precautions, like disinfecting anything he plays with and such. Also, be on the lookout for sick kids when you go there. If the center you chose doesn't manage that well, you might want to switch.
Oh, joy. Perfect setup for at least one "I told you so" from her mom.
Thanks.
Gentry followed Dr. Evans out of the exam room, cradling her wailing son, and walked directly into the sight line of three other moms and their kids. The women, dressed in stretchy yoga pants and busy wrestling toddlers who were acting more like monkeys than kids, wore expressions ranging from contempt to pity.
Well, screw them.
Colt may be loud, but he was still perfect. She forced herself to smile, grateful that she'd managed to wear a chic summer rag-and-bone halter dress and kick-ass platform sandals. Chin up, she breezed by, beaming at Colt as if his cries were akin to Beethoven's Ode to Joy, and then headed directly to CVS. After suffering through a Muzak rendition of George Michael's Father Figure during a painful wait in the miles-long line at the pharmacy counter, she finally got home and administered the first dose. Thankfully, Colt had worn himself out. She put him down in his bassinet after raising one side. Grabbing the remote from her nightstand, she then rolled down the blackout shades. Her eyes adjusted to the darkened room, enough to allow her to enjoy watching Colt's body and mouth twitch as he fell off to sleep. The bottomless love in her heart terrified her. She'd never cared this much for anything. That made her fear of screwing up, something she'd never much worried about before, unbearable. Between Colt's chronic pain and constant crying, she had yet to experience the sustained joyfulness that motherhood brought others. Someday. Soon. Please. For now, she'd try to escape her bedroom without waking him. Something of a quandary, actually. Maybe she should nap instead of risk the door click waking him. Having slept so well last night, she didn't need a nap. She needed to solve her work problem pronto, and then finally frame those photos. She crept from the bedroom on her tiptoes. Once she reached the living room, she flopped onto the sofa cushions, sprawling out like a lazy teen, and enjoyed the debris-free space. Ian had been a godsend, and a gorgeous one at that. One that had stirred up all kinds of unsettling sensations. Like her son's tummy trouble, hers she'd suffer without any cure. How long did one have to go without sex to be considered a virgin again? Now that was something to cry about. Abstinence-induced colic, she snickered. Thinking of Ian reminded her of her promise to give Sarah an update. Gentry might as well embrace the productive way to procrastinate about telling Hunter she wouldn't be back at work tomorrow.
Gentry, how's Colt?
Sarah answered without preamble. Ear infection. Gentry closed her eyes, determined to sound confident instead of contrite, even in the face of proof that Colt might have been better off under Sarah's care.
You were right to suggest calling Ian. Thanks.
I'm glad he could help. Gentry doubted Ian had followed up with Sarah or told her that he'd spent the night.
He was very helpful.
It had been beyond wonderful to have an extra set of eyes and ears and hands. Women with husbands or partners were lucky
She'd kill for that kind of support.
I'll tell him you said so, Sarah said.
Oh?
Gentry sat up, alert and slightly hot.
You're seeing him today?
Maybe.
A shuffling noise came through the phone, and Gentry could hear Ty in the background.
Hunter's home to watch Ty, so I'm running errands, getting a haircut. I plan to swing by the Angel House with some donations, too. Ian might be there visiting his mom. If not, I can pass the message along.
Ian's cool green eyes and scruffy jaw from this morning flickered in Gentry's memory. Her mouth went kind of dry.
How stupid.
Ian Crawford was a reputable man, almost too good, and in no way the right guy for her. She detected a hint of wry humor beneath that serious demeanor, but he didn't seem like a man who liked to have fun. Gentry craved fun, and hopefully would have some one day soon, before she forgot how. Ian also had no sense of fashion, no money, and no interest in her. Well, no real interest. He had been a little affected by her near-naked body, but a man would have to be dead not to, she conceded. In any case, she'd be a fool to pine for a guy so obviously ill-suited to her lifestyle. If she were to bring a man into Colt's life, it should probably be Smith. But finding him when she had no idea where to begin could prove impossible. And there were risks. Normally, risks wouldn't bother her, but when it came to her son, she couldn't afford to be impulsive. In the meantime, she could use help. If she recalled, Ian could use housing.
Sarah, do you have Ian's number? I promised him an update, too.
A harmless white lie.
Sure, I'll text it to you.
Another loud noise rang out, followed by the sound of Hunter's scolding voice. Ty must have broken something. A hint of things to come in Gentry's life a year or two from now. Perhaps she should have decorated her condo with foam padding and shag carpets instead of glass and stone.
Oh, shoot. Gentry, I've got to go. If you need anything, let me know. I'm happy to help.
I'm good. Don't forget to text me.
Gentry wasn't sure if Sarah heard that last part until 5 minutes later when her phone pinged. She stared at the number.
It'd be bold, rarely a deterrent.
He'd be shocked, which she usually enjoyed. Yet Ian was honest and an EMT, the best possible temporary nanny until Colt was well enough to go to Miss Linda's. Decision made, she dialed him. To her surprise, he answered, despite not recognizing the caller. What kind of person answered anonymous calls these days?
Hello?
His rich voice sounded sexier than she remembered, probably because she wasn't distracted by her own appearance or embarrassment. Her gut responded with a chorus of flutters. She flexed her toes.
Hi, Ian. It's Gentry Cabot.
Oh, hi. His voice jumped a key or two.
Is something wrong with Colt?
Gentry grinned at his concern.
No, he has a cold and an ear infection. Nothing respiratory.
That's good.
She paused because she didn't know how to begin. Ian struck her as a guy's guy, unlikely to consider himself perfect nanny material. With each millisecond, she felt more foolish sitting there, tongue-tied. No one who knew her would believe it.
Is there something else?
He asked when the silence dragged on.
Actually, yes.
Deep breath and then go for it.
I'm supposed to return to work tomorrow, but with Colt's fever, I can't drop him at daycare. Sarah had mentioned that you were temporarily stuck in a motel. I can offer you $750 per week and a free place to live if you'll watch Colt while I'm at work. It'd be temporary, like a few weeks, until he can safely go to daycare.
She closed her eyes and held her breath, picturing Ian's face.
He'd probably grimaced in horror.
She opened her eyes when that vision made her stomach twist in an unpleasant way.
Ian?
He hesitated, blowing out a breath and a derisive chuckle.
Sure. Why not?
On the surface, she should be thrilled. She would be, in fact, if it weren't for his self-mocking tone.
Gee, don't be too excited.
She covered her mouth, shaking her head. She needed his help more than he wanted hers.
Sorry.
He cleared his throat.
It's perfect, actually. I need something temporary. I'm returning to Haiti at the first opportunity.
That wasn't exactly news to her. It shouldn't matter at all, yet the living room seemed suddenly gloomy, despite the sunlight pouring in through the windows.
Great. Come over any time today. The guest room is upstairs, so you'll have some privacy. To a degree, anyway. There's no escaping Colt's crying.
I picked up on that already.
His tone shifted, sounding almost warm, like he didn't deem her son a nightmarish devil.
Guess I'll see you a little later.
I'll come by around 6, if that works.
Perfect. I'll try to get Colt down before then, so we can talk.
Thanks.
She hung up and slunk back down into the cushions, one arm over her eyes.
As impulsive moves went, this was nothing new, yet her erratic heartbeat had only now resumed a normal rhythm.
She smiled, welcoming the kind of eager anticipation she hadn't experienced in months. Help was on its way, and its packaging was no hardship. Spirits renewed, she checked the baby monitor, then grabbed a yogurt, banana, and the mirror frames. Once she'd finished eating, she sorted through the photos and began to separate them, while also thinking through a list of rules for Ian. While framing, her thoughts turned toward the handsome rescuer on the way, and her devious, sex-depraved mind started to spin all kinds of scenarios that had nothing at all to do with Ian's abilities as a child caregiver. This could be trouble, or fun, or both. Before she had Colt, that combination had always been something Gentry relished. Her mischievousness came rushing back, like lyrics to an old song she hadn't sung in far too long. It took Ian less than 10 minutes to pack his duffel bag. He then sat on the motel bed, blinking into space. A nanny? No, a manny, for Christ's sakes. Not something he'd ever considered, but Gentry's offer had been otherwise perfect. Temporary housing? Ready cash? He'd do anything for that, including saddle himself to a colicky infant and his high-maintenance mother. In less than a month, he'd have enough money for airfare and a little extra. Per his discussions with Archer, he'd go straight to Jacmel and oversee Stanley and the renovations to the cheap commercial property they'd recently leased. While still in Oregon, Ian would work on acquiring basic life support ambulances. This nanny gig would be fine, as long as he and Gentry worked out boundaries in advance. Boundaries that should include a rule against waltzing around the house in underwear. Of course, he'd be lying if he pretended he wouldn't like to see that again. The recollection once again made him semi-hard. He smirked at himself and shook his head. Keep your cool. If Farah couldn't deal with Ian's choices, a woman like Gentry
definitely couldn't put up with him and his lifestyle. He'd approach this job like he did when he was training others for disaster work, teach her some basics, and establish systems she could maintain without him. At that point, he'd leave her and Cole better off than he'd found them, and then move on with his life. Feeling better about his decision, he heaved the duffel over his shoulder and took an Uber to Lake Sandy. As he approached the glossy black door, it occurred to him that he'd never lived any place this posh. An uncomfortable sensation took root, which seemed ironic that something might be wrong with him, because he felt less anxious in a foreign land ravaged by disaster and disease than he did in an upper-class neighborhood in his own hometown. A memory of his father and him surfaced. Ian had been about 8. They'd been trolling a local neighborhood, knocking on doors to ask for pledge money for some walkathon, when they'd arrived at a newer home with a red Corvette parked in the driveway.
Whoa!
Ian broke free of his dad's hold, ran to the shiny car, and peered in its window. He imagined its engine roaring to life, then bounced on his toes.
Dad, let's get a car like this one.
His father watched him, wearing a slight frown.
Come on back. Let's remember our mission.
Ian returned to his father's side, but not without stealing several more glances at that vet and picturing himself in it, with its roof removed. So cool. A woman answered the door, polite smile fixed on her face. Ian's father had barely begun his spiel when she raised her hand.
Sorry, but I don't want to waste your time. We donate to other charities already. Can't do them all, you know?
Of course. Have a nice day,
Ian's father said before she closed the door. He took Ian's hand and walked down the front walkway, then stopped on the sidewalk and turned toward the ruby-red stunner Ian so admired. Together, they stared at it just long enough for Ian to fantasize that his father might want one too. Then his dad said,
"Think of how many meals or clothes the money for that showy car might have purchased for the Burnside shelter." Without another word, his father ruffled Ian's hair and tugged him along to the next house.
Ian hadn't remembered that incident in years. Now he knocked on Gentry's door and waited, wondering, with an uneasy kind of anticipation, what life with Gentry Cabot would bring.
It wouldn't be boring. That much was certain.
As soon as she opened the door, he heard Colts whining in the distance.
It didn't shock him that she'd failed to get him to sleep. On top of being sick, the kid seemed willful.
Hey.
She backed up and waved him in, her crooked, forced smile suggesting it had been another long day.
Welcome.
Thanks. He stepped inside and looked around. In less than 10 hours, the living room had nearly reverted to its former state. Gentry must have pulled out every toy and blanket in an effort to entertain her son. He also noted a half-eaten slice of pizza and open soda can on an end table. She stepped around the stroller she'd parked in the entry and crossed to Colt.
I wish the medicine worked faster. This is torture.
Sorry.
He stood there, awkwardly, unsure how to begin this new job. Then he remembered. Establish trust. Always step one.
Couldn't you get him down?
No, he's not sleepy.
She cuddled her son and looked at Ian with no small amount of exasperation.
What if you put him in the bassinet and let him cry a bit? He'd eventually give up and pass out.
No,
her eyes widened. Then he'll think I don't care. She might not have noticed the way she covered Colt's ears, as if she didn't even want him to hear Ian's suggestion. So much for step one. The truth was that Ian knew very little about raising kids other than the two basic parenting styles, tough love or indulgence. He'd been raised with a bit of both, his father being tough, his mom being soft. Obviously, Gentry took after his mom, so perhaps his role should provide balance.
I doubt he'll remember when he grows up. In the meantime, you'd get a little break now and then.
I'm not so wimpy that I need to torment my son just to give myself a break. She frowned, staring at him now with some doubt. We'd better talk through our expectations.
Don't worry. I'll follow your rules. I'm only making a suggestion.
He stood in place, scanning the room, uncertain about what he should do next.
Maybe I should put my things away?
Her gaze landed on his medium-sized canvas duffel.
That's all your stuff?
He patted it.
I travel light.
Gentry's features blanked for a second, like she couldn't process having so little. When she came to, she pointed to an open wooden iron staircase to his left.
Your room's upstairs on the right. Take your time. I'll go rock Colt a while. When he wears out, we can talk.
She held herself high and strutted toward her bedroom.
Although her dress covered her ass, barely, he couldn't help but recall the way she'd looked this morning.
He watched her hips sway, her long legs eating up the floor until she disappeared from view. On his way upstairs, he passed by several black and white photos that hung on the wall in the substantial square mirrored frames he'd piled in the corner last night. He paused to take a closer look. Most were taken while Colt slept. One caught the baby awake with his face in repose. The collection was extensive for a kid who was only a couple of months old. At this rate, she'd have the place decked out in the world's most expensive wallpaper by Colt's first birthday. He continued up the stairs and found the bedroom on the right. The Taj Mahal compared with the motel and any other place he'd ever slept. It smelled of lavender and lemon. Like the rest of the condo, its walls were dove gray. The room featured a huge plate glass window, providing him his own lake view. Sunrise would be pretty amazing tomorrow, and stargazing wouldn't be too bad either. A platform bed with stark white linens and a gray leather headboard dominated the room. The dark wood floors were partly covered by a low-pile gray and white carpet. Shimmery gauze drapes framed either side of the window, and LED pendant lights hung low over the nightstands, flanking the massive bed. Along the opposite wall stood a small dresser, more than adequate for his few belongings, especially with the closet that had been outfitted with shelving and hanging rods. After unpacking, he wandered into the bathroom, with its slate floors, modern-style vanity, and large glass-encased shower. It was almost too fancy to mess up, he thought. This bedroom suite exceeded the standards of most homes he'd ever seen. He shook his head to clear his guilt, and then decided to test the mattress. A mistake. A pillow top with the perfect firmness for support. He let himself fall back and stretch his arms overhead. Closing his eyes, he marveled a bit at the situation. Him, in a fancy condo. Babysitting. No one would believe it. He could die on this mattress and be happy. It felt that good. No bugs or lumps. Heaven. Then, he being a guy,
and a red-headed bombshell being only a few rooms away, he thought of other uses for this monster-sized bed. His mind conjured a reverse babysitter fantasy, this one featuring Gentry in the panties and tank top she'd worn this morning. Maybe she'd come knocking in the wee hours because she couldn't sleep. He pictured her standing against the door jamb, hip cocked, hair piled on her head, except for a stray tendril or two. A familiar smoky voice interrupted his answering grin. "What in the world are you thinking?" His eyes popped open as he sprang upright. There she was, almost like in his fantasy, except she was still wearing the halter dress. "Nothing." He stood, eager to move away from that conversation and those thoughts. "This room's amazing." She crossed to the window and glanced down toward the lake, hands linked behind her back. "When I first saw this condo, all the trees and water views made it seem like a peaceful haven where I could raise my son. Guess the joke's on me."
"How so?"
She turned and shot him a give-me-a-break look. "After meeting Colt, you don't really think I have any peace here, do you?"
"Not yet, but you will soon. Babies grow up and stop fussing."
"So they say. But unlike other moms, I find myself wishing time away to get there, and that doesn't feel so good." She pressed her lips together in a tight line, as if regretting what she'd confessed. Looking through the window once more, she said, "Let's go downstairs and talk about how this will work."
"Whatever you want."
"Look at you, already a star pupil." She grinned and twirled toward the door, walking out ahead of him. He couldn't help but chuckle and admit, despite it all, he liked her feisty humor. Thank God he wouldn't be here long enough to do anything stupid. Chapter 4. Quandary. According to Merriam-Webster, a state of perplexity or doubt. According to me, the state of my decision about Colt's childcare. Gentry held the railing on her way down the steps, grasping at anything to steady herself. It was one thing to take impulsive risks when she'd been single, quite another to do so where her son was concerned. Ian tromped behind her, a stranger in her home, one she'd hired on a whim, probably because he'd revived her spirit by giving her a solid night's sleep. Meanwhile, she hadn't asked for references, other than Sarah, and had relied on the fact that he knew how to handle healthcare emergencies. What had she been thinking? Guilty heat warmed her cheeks when the devil on her shoulder whispered reminders about his other fine attributes. When they reached the living room, she asked, "How about a drink?"
"Sure."
He stood with his hands in his pockets, calm and still, not ruffled at all. Another quandary to ponder. Had he acquired that special skill because of working in disaster zones, or was he able to work those jobs because of a natural state of zen? Either way, she needed to vet this guy ASAP. "Cool." She walked to the refrigerator to see if she had any beer. He looked more like a beer guy than a wine guy, and it seemed important to get that right. "Beer?"
"Actually, water's fine."
He rocked back on his heels.
"Water?"
"I've got wine." She stood with the refrigerator door still open, the cold air keeping her rising body temperature in check. He shook his head.
"I promise, I'm good with water."
she kept from rolling her eyes. Eagle Scout? Or something worse, she suddenly thought. Are you a recovering alcoholic? She slapped her hand across her mouth as soon as she blurted out the worrisome thought.
No.
For the first time since he'd arrived tonight, it seemed like she'd flustered him. He recovered quickly, though. Good. He'd need that skill. She doubted that would be the one and only time she said something that shocked him. Sorry. I wouldn't judge, though. I only wanted to know because of Colt.
I understand, but don't worry. I've never been much of a drinker.
What a shame, she grinned. He smiled in kind, his eyes crinkling in a way that suggested he was trying to figure her out. Good luck with that. She pointed to the narrow cupboard above the dishwasher. Glasses are over there. You might as well start learning where stuff is. For a split second, she debated the wine, then got irked. Hell, if she'd let anyone make her feel like she shouldn't drink wine in her own house. She'd adopt a conservative role at Cabot Tea in order to bond with her family, but she needed her freedom at home. She retrieved the opened bottle of Arnaise from the refrigerator, a perfect light white wine for summer. She poured herself a bit, then reconsidered and filled the entire glass. Let's sit on the deck and talk about how this will work.
After you.
He gestured for her to lead, water glass in hand. On her way through the living room, she grabbed the baby monitor and a throw from the sofa to pull over her shoulders in case the breeze made it too cool. Ian stood on the deck, waiting for her to choose a seat. His formality would not do. This guy needed to loosen up. She decided to mess with him a little, make him laugh. Earlier this morning, she'd glimpsed a hint of good humor buried under all his manners. Manners were nice, but she preferred playfulness, especially in a roommate. Donning the blanket like a cape, she started for one chair, then circled it and headed for another, cape flowing behind her, before stepping away from both. With one arm across her chest and the other bringing her wine glass to her lips, she watched him. His brows pinched together in confusion. Then one quirked upward. He looked her in the eye, mimicked her position, down to her extended pinky finger, and sipped his water. She lost the battle against smiling, at which point he chuckled. How about we sit at the same time? She offered.
Sure.
He reached for the chair nearest to him. Nope, that's mine. She used her hip to bump him out of the way. The brief contact, her first physical contact with any man in months, excluding family, caused her body to reverberate like a gong. She dropped onto the seat, tucked the blanket around her cool feet, and took a long swallow of wine so he couldn't see her blush. He sat, stretching his long muscular legs out, while letting his gaze take in the wooded hillside and glittering lake below. His boyishly handsome face held her attention. In another life, she might have leapt across the table and licked those freckles scattered across the bridge of his nose, and then bitten his shapely bottom lip. Nice view. Worth every penny. As soon as those words left her mouth, she noticed his mouth twitch, like he'd squashed a thought, an impolite one. Huh. Her ice-breaking silliness hadn't quite eased the tension. Time to lay it on the table. Let's start by getting all the awkwardness out of the way. Otherwise, living together for 2 minutes, let alone 2 weeks or more, will be torture. He shrugged. Fire away.
In case you were wondering, I'm not crazy, despite the fact that I hired a virtual stranger to watch my son. She made sure to keep her gaze steady, although that was harder than it should have been. He possessed the kind